Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And he joins us on the River Islands Guest Line, presented by our proud partner, Golden State Lumber and Showroom, serving the Bay Area for three generations. Building better starts with Golden State. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit goldenstatelumber.com. And Baldy, let's just bring you right into this. We were talking about just a massive, massive week one victory, obviously, against your division rival, Seattle Seahawks. Sam Darnold makes his debut. Obviously, the history between Mike McDonald, Kyle Shanahan. It was a hell of a win, but now we have more question marks as George Kittle going to be out a few weeks. Brock Purdy now dealing with a left shoulder injury and a toe injury. Christian McCaffrey, it looked like he had the same burst. Had a lot of touches in that game, not on the injury report. Juwan Jennings has a shoulder injury. How much is that going to linger? So back to more injury problems with the 49ers, who was the most injured team last season, Baldy. But let's start off with that win. How massive was it for them to get that dub the way they did it, and Brock Purdy, the quarterback, fighting through adversity after those two bad interceptions?
Well, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, the throw to Pearsall to get him down there was maybe as deep a throw as I've ever seen Brock make. And that's over a good corner in Tyreek Thornton, Woolen right there. He got behind him. Now, that was a great throw. That was 50-something yards in the air. That was, and then, you know, the game winner to Jake Tongas. I mean, if George Kittle is out there, does George Kittle catch a game winner? I don't know. Like, it was just a perfect timing. The kid jumped right in front of Woolen to take it away from him. Brock put it up there on the tee. That's an incredible comeback win and a tough place to play. Like, that game, just watching it, the physicality of that game, it reminded me of, you know, Pete Carroll, Seattle, and, you know, Jim Harbaugh, San Francisco, and some of those battles that you all watched, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Like, it was that level of just, I mean, it was just one car crash after another in that game. There was some great hitting going on all over the field by a lot of young players in San Francisco, players in Seattle. Like, that was about as physical a game as I saw all weekend.
You know, how do you evaluate a game for a guy like Brock Purdy? In the first half, it felt like his anticipation of where the blitz was and his ability to get rid of the ball or move the pocket was on another level. And I thought a lesser quarterback would have been sacked a half dozen or more times in that game. But you have a mixed bag of results. All this good, the game-winning drive, they win the game. That's what it's about. And then a couple of just oh-no throws. So when you're evaluating that as a player, as a part of the coaching staff, how much do you weigh these things when talking about the quarterback play?
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, look, I mean, you know, Kyle wants to attack the middle of the field. You know, the first throw to Juwan is he just didn't quite get it. I don't think he saw Jones on the play. Like, they came over from the linebacker spot looking for work and, you know, got his fingertips on it and took it away from him. Those are layered throws that Brock's been really good at. And one of the things that separated him from Jimmy Garoppolo, because Garoppolo struggled with those throws. But that's where they want to attack. And that's where Seattle, you know, that's what Seattle wants you to do. They want you to go to the middle. They funnel everything to the middle of the field. And then, you know, then it's okay, we're going to have some contact points and we're going to get some fingertips on the balls, you know. And then the second one, you know, he's trying to throw it to Pearsall in the deep over. And I don't know, I thought Pearsall could have made a little better fight for it, but Joe made a good play. You know, he's being aggressive in the throws. So I don't know, like, nobody wants to turn the ball over. You turn it over twice in this league, like, you don't win games. Like, they got it back twice, which evened it out. But at least he was being aggressive with his throws, and they were down the field. They weren't like, I don't know, just because his arm was weak or he didn't see a guy. I don't know. Like I kind of felt like I could live with it a little bit, to be honest with you.
No, I love that evaluation. Purdy was diagnosed yesterday with a shoulder injury on the non-throwing.
Did it happen, Joe, in the last play?
Well, I don't know.
When he got hit?
I don't know. There was one where he was scrambling earlier in the game. He spun backwards and then threw one away and got planted into the ground on the non-throwing shoulder. So I don't know which play that happened on. And then they said he has a some sort of a toe injury. Like, I mean, Baldy, like, everyone's hurt right now. I think if it's your quarterback and he's able to protect himself and play, he's got to play. How should they attack this week?
Well, I mean, just because it's New Orleans, you don't make any – you put the healthy guys out there. I mean, typically, you know, like if it happened on the last play, like he fell right on his left shoulder as he made that throw, I don't know when it happened. But it's – you know, if it's any kind of a sprain, like it feels terrible right now, you know, 2 days after. I mean, it's just – you know, he can't lift it. He can't get out of bed. You know, it's just going to hurt. It's going to affect him probably in practice. The toe thing – I don't know what level of, you know, toe injury there is, but those things, you could play with it for sure. It's just, you know, how much can you practice with it? And so, I mean, I'm sure that they're going to be busy getting Mac Jones up and ready, you know, for the game this week, because you have to. You just don't know, like, just the level of soreness or pain, or I don't think the fact that he practices or doesn't practice is going to make a difference. If he can go on Sunday, I think they'll let him go. Practice certainly helps. Everybody, you know, especially getting ready for a new defense that New Orleans has. But I think it's just a question of really how's he feel on Saturday right now, even if he has to miss a bunch of practice time. I think if he feels good on Saturday, they'll put him out there.
Talking about Brian Baldinger, Odyssey NFL Insider, 95.7 The Game NFL Insider, breaking down the 49ers week one win in Seattle ahead of their week two matchup against the Saints. And brings us to this, if Mac Jones has to go up against the Saints in the Superdome, Baldy, how should we be feeling if I'm a Niner fan with this offensive line that had a lot of question marks in week one?
Well, I mean, Seattle has got some great pass rushers, and they do pressure you pretty good, and they did have some success for sure. New Orleans doesn't have a pass rush like that. Not to say that those guys can't wake up, but they don't have those type of players. It's not the same, but the noise that can counter that. I mean, it was noisy in Seattle. I don't know which one can be worse. Seattle is the loudest outdoor stadium in the league. New Orleans is the loudest indoor stadium in the league. So they're going to have to deal with that, period. Silent counts, probably laid off the ball at times. But those are, you know, those, nobody's going to feel sorry for you because you're on the road. Or I don't know. Is this game?
It's New Orleans.
Yeah.
10 a.m.
It's in New Orleans. Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, it's the loudest indoor stadium in the league. You got to deal with it. You know, a lot of silent counts and communication is really, really tough. And those fans know exactly what to do and how to do it to affect you know, the visiting team.
What did you think of Christian McCaffrey as a runner? I thought he was more effective as a pass catcher, and I love the way Kyle utilized a couple of, like, angle screens, like very unique plays. I really liked him as a pass catcher. I thought he was slightly hesitant as a runner, but what did the film say to you, Baldy?
I thought he was good. I mean, Seattle's got they're good up front. There wasn't a whole lot of lanes there, but I thought he really hit something. Like, one of the things I look for with Christian, when he's getting through a tight space on an inside zone, any kind of inside zone, like that guy has the ability just to kind of jump through it. And I saw him jump a couple of times. And like it's just a quick, subtle thing, but it's his thing. Like it's what he does. And when he's on, like he's doing that. And because he's going to get in. When he lands, like he's ready to explode. I saw some really explosive moves of his. One of those on the screen that you're talking about, Joe, for sure. Like I saw the burst, and sometimes you just trust your eyes. Like the burst is there, and he got a lot of touches. I know he didn't run for a lot of yards, but they really. But you know, in order to get open in the passing game, you got to have quickness to defeat, you know, underneath defenders and people that are man coverage on you. And I saw some good separation from him. It's not 2 years ago good, but it's better than any point we saw last year. And so I thought that was encouraging. In fact, I might go back and do just a breakdown on some of the bursts that I saw It wasn't every play for sure, but I thought you know, in short yardage, like, he's always been really good at just pushing a pile. He's got power behind that frame of his, and so I saw a bunch of that, I thought, on Sunday.
Baldy, what did you make of George Kittle? Obviously, he looked like he was picking up where he left off with that all-pro season last year, and you got Christian McCaffrey back for a full game, and you couldn't even have a full game with your two studs with Kittle and McCaffrey. Now Kittle's going to be out at least a couple weeks with a hamstring injury. Just how big of a blow was that for this team early on to try to withstand this storm?
Well, it's big. I mean, you know, George is, you know, he's a red zone touchdown maker. He is as good in this whole business at yards after the catch. So, you know, 6 yard slants can go for 25, the way that he attacks the ball. You know, he refuses to be tackled by one guy. He's not going out of bounds. Just the mentality that he possesses is just so unusual or different than most tight ends. And so that's a huge playmaker. And then his blocking is elite in the run game. And so I don't care who they put out there right now. Nobody is George Kittle. So there's a big drop-off at that position. And just a trusted figure when Brock has to move and escape. You know, Kittle has a good feel for where to go to find the ball to get in the passing lane. And those are some things that you can't really teach that George has learned over the course of his career.
Yeah, and he was a trusted third down guy twice on that first drive, once in the red zone for a touchdown in the short yardage situation. It's a big blow. But they do have Ricky Pearsall, and I was very encouraged with what I saw from Ricky. Yep. I'll give you my comp for him. I saw this guy in this offense. He reminds me a lot of Emmanuel Sanders. I don't know if he's as fast, straight line, but he's athletic, and he's more tough than I give him credit for. I like Ricky, Baldy.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's bigger than Emmanuel was. People will probably have to go back a long ways. Emmanuel Sanders is a good player in this league for a long time. But I think Ricky is, like my comp for him coming out, honestly, was Ladd McConkey. Now, he's not, as you know, obviously Ladd McConkey's production is off the charts already. And, you know, he wasn't healthy, but he gave him a chance. But I thought they were very, very similar coming out. And we've seen what Ladd McConkey has become and who he is. And I think Ricky Pearsall could be all of that.
Talking with Brian Baldinger here on the Morning Roast, our Odyssey NFL insider. And Baldy, one of the big takeaways from that week one win, why we were so excited yesterday, was that defensive performance, right? A lot of question marks heading into the season, right? You knew who Bosa was, you knew who Fred Warner and Demo Lenore were, but D Winners looked like he brought the swagger back to that defense that they desperately missed. Upton Stout, Marquise Seale, hey, Renardo Green making plays. What did you feel and what did you see from that young defense of the San Francisco 49ers?
I tell you, you know, when I said this reminded me of the throwback games to, 2012, 13, 14, between these two teams, it was the Niners defense that did it for me. Like, they were so physical throughout the game. And then they made the plays, obviously, you know, at the end, you know, and Sam made the one and Bosa made the one. But I thought they were so physical, and D Winters just brings it. Like, he is just a thumper. Like, that guy plays the game the right way. I don't know how big D is, but he made a big difference out there. And it was good to see Fred. I know he got, you know, kind of shaken up early for a play or two, but, you know, Fred looked great. I thought the defensive front played fantastic. That's a good running football team. They want to be able to run the football. And I tell you, Salah had those guys ready to play. They were playing very physical, tough. Mikel made some plays in there. I know he didn't have a lot of stats, but, you know, he's a very physical player at the point of attack. I thought it was really impressive how hard they played, how they pursued to the football. You could see that this is a completely different style of defense than what we witnessed the last 3 years.
Why is that? I noticed a five-man front at times early in that game, which I've been begging them to do. I also noticed them disguise, you know, hey, here's everybody at the line, and I'm going to drop some guys and bring others. We just haven't done a lot of that. And then to see all the young guys, Stout, who Joe referenced, Siegel, and D Winners, all make plays in that secondary and in that back end, I love what Saul is doing. So what was different specifically?
I thought they were a lot more aggressive. Now, that's kind of a general term. But I thought they attacked a lot more. They attacked the line of scrimmage. They really were controlled the gaps at the point of attack. I mean, Kenneth Walker now, like, you know, you're throwing a screen out there in space to that kid. Like, for 2 years now, he's made everybody out in space miss. And D. Winters is right there getting him down to the ground. I mean, there's 35 yards to be made there if he misses that tackle. Like, I thought their tackling was crisp. The fumble recovery by Siegel, like, that scramble for the football, that's anybody's ball. The ball's out. It's on the ground. To see that kid come and attack the football like that, like, you just don't do that because you had good walkthroughs one day. Like, something is triggering guys to go after a football like it's the most important bar of gold in the world. And I just seeing those kind of plays gave me hope that this defense can return to some of the prominence that it's had.
It just feels like the juice is back with Robert Saleh. You saw it in the preseason, Baldy. There is something to be said. And I do think we overblew, you know, Steve Wilks being up in the booth and being down the sideline. But there is something to be said about the familiarity and the respect factor of Robert Saleh. And from one guy and one guy alone who talked about it this offseason was Nick Bosa. Calling game at the end there against Sam Darnold, getting that fumble recovery. Can we be seeing another DPOY type of season from Nick Bosa? I know it's one game, Baldy, but I was very encouraged.
He was awesome. Nick was awesome. Now, you could say that, okay, Charles Cross had some success against him. But, you know, Nick's always going to go both sides. He's going to play both. But to take Big Abe, they just gave him a contract extension this week. They just said, you're our right tackle for the next 4 years. And he literally lifted him off the ground and walked him right back to Sam Darnold. I mean, it's the ultimate trifecta for any defensive lineman. The game's on the line. You get the sack. You get the sack fumble and the fumble recovery. Like, honestly, if that's the only play Nick made all day, that would have been fantastic to close the game out. Because that's what you want to do. You want to be fresh. You want to be in shape. You want to be able to affect the game when the game is on the line. He did that. But then in addition to the other plays that he made, he looked every bit like he did the year that he won that award.
Baldy, we can't do 17 weeks of this kicker thing. I don't think I can do this. And I'm not mad at the kid. I don't get why the coach and the general manager have chosen this route. What do you do with the kicker? Have you ever been in a situation in a locker room where it's like this? It's kind of absurd, isn't it?
It is. And honestly, a lot of players look at kickers different than maybe just another teammate. Like, that's your job, is to go make that extra point and make that field goal. That's your job. I've seen it where, honestly, they put the kicker in that same room with the mops and the brooms. Like, you change there. Like, you can come out when you start making kicks. I've seen the kickers treated like that. You can do everything you want to pump the kid up, whatever. Kicks at the end of practice to avoid sprints or what. Like, you got to have a dependable kicker in this business, man. There's just, these games are coming down to kicks. And the decisions, when you miss an extra point, the decisions that go forward, do I go for two to get it back? Like, these things can compound itself. And it did last year, throughout the season. Like, I don't know, like, kickers are on a carousel. They go around the league. Graham Gano has been on, I don't know how many different teams in this league. But, like, some of these guys, you just got to get them on the bus out of town and get the next guy in here. And you hope, like, you got to have a guy ready. You can't lose games because of kicks. You can't.
Exactly. Exactly. Baldy, one last one for you. You know, so much has been made of the 49ers injuries and stuff. And look, the game is violent. I don't know what it is, but we never give credit where credit is due. I liked the way Kyle Shanahan utilized both backs in this game. I thought, whatever, you could tell me whether Brian Robinson played well or not, but in the way that they substituted the two and utilized both of them in the run game, CMC and Brian Robinson, I liked the way Kyle kind of deployed the touches. What was your feel on the whole running back and the touches and the way that they utilized them?
Well, just to be a smart ass here, Joe, their best backup running back was in Minnesota last night. He played great.
Look awesome. Why did they get rid of him, Baldy? I don't get it.
I mean, honestly, Joe, like, that kid is a bullet train. Like, his blitz pickup, those runs that he popped, like, he's a great player. I don't know what happened. But Brian Robinson isn't Jordan Mason. Now, he played okay. Brian's all right. Like, he's not a thumper. He's a big back, but he's not really a thumper. He's not Jordan Mason. He doesn't hit a hole like that. But he played okay, but you're going to have to take carries off of Christian. He had a lot of touches as it was, and it's just week one. like, you're going to have to rotate guys. You might have to get three guys in there, you know, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know what Garendo's status is or anybody else at this point, but you're going to have to be careful about McCaffrey and how frequently you get him. So to answer your point, like, I like what they did. I think they have to do that. And you're just, you know, he had a couple good runs in there. He had a couple 7-9 yard runs in there. That was good. But Jordan Mason, for me, is like, I can't figure out for the life of me why he's not on the team.
I mean, not only Mason making plays last night, another former Niner, Javon Hargrave, making plays last night, Baldy. More so than I saw him do at any time.
I just did a breakdown on him.
You did?
Like, he had 2 sacks last night. He shut down the Bears' rushing attack last night for the most part. He played great. And he played a lot of snaps, too. He played 50 out of 70 snaps last night, and he was a difference maker for the Vikings.
Hey, Baldy, great stuff. We really appreciate your time this morning. We'll do it again next week.
You're the best, buddy.
We'll be reacting either a Brock Purdy game or a Mac Jones game. Thanks, man.
Either way, I'll be here.
He'll be there. That leads us to the injury report.
Jordan Mason.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.